Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a bit different. We're looking into this set of source materials that really sits at this, well, uncomfortable spot between like a documented incident report and pure local folklore.
Yeah, it's a strange mix, and we're going deep today on one specific story. It's set in rural Kentucky back in 1981.
Right, focusing on this case involving a teenager named Mark, his family, and this really ominous figure they called the Crowfield Scarecrow.
Exactly. 17-year-old kid, Vivid Skeptic.
So our goal here really is to dissect the narrative that the sources give us. We're not trying to, prove or disprove the legend itself.
No, not at all. It's more about unpacking the specific details. What makes this feel less like just a ghost story and more like something, well, something recorded?
Yeah, things like the exact warnings the family got and that really disturbing origin story for the scarecrow they talk about.
And the physical evidence, supposedly, or at least the data points in it, the photos, that kind of thing, that are presented as proof the entity was, active, not just static.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the sources. They're unusual in how they frame this. They lay it out almost like a case file. You've got dates, names, references to evidence that was supposedly recovered.
Like the last photograph. They mention that specifically.
Right. So we really have to approach this not just as, some spooky story people told, but as a narrative about someone challenging something.
Skepticism meets something else.
Exactly. Skepticism, violation, and then this idea of transformation. And containment. That's key.
Okay, so let's set the scene first. 1981. A family, Mark, who's 17, and his parents, they're moving. New start, old farmhouse, way out in rural Kentucky.
Deeply rural.
And you have to remember, 1981. This is way before everyone had cell phones, before the internet was a thing.
Absolutely. Critical context. That isolation, especially back then, it's huge.
Mm.
In places like that, local stories, folklore. It wasn't just entertainment.
It was practical knowledge almost.
Kind of, yeah. It was how communities process things, maybe rationalize danger, tragedy. It was a shared understanding. Mm-hmm. So when outsiders move in, like this family,
they're outside that local knowledge loop.
Precisely. They haven't gotten the memo, basically.
Yeah.
They're outside the safety protocols, the warnings that everyone else just knows.
And the warning comes pretty much straight away. The sources say it came from just, casual chats with locals, maybe at the gas station, the general store.
Probably the only one for miles around.
And they point out the specific feature near the new house. It's this field filled with what they call dying corn.
Dying corn, not thriving.
And in the middle of it, just one scarecrow.
Yeah.
Big one, apparently, dominating the view.
Yeah, what gets me about those first warnings is how they phrase it. It's an inversion of what you'd expect.
How so?
They didn't just say, be careful near that field. They specifically called it a field that doesn't need guarding.
Doesn't need guarding? Okay, that's weird. What does that even imply?
Well, think about it. Normally, a guarded field means a farmer's protecting crops. But if it doesn't need guarding, mm-hmm. it suggests the field itself, or maybe what's in it, handles its own security.
Like it's self-sufficiently dangerous.
Or inherently protected. It flips the power dynamic completely. The land, or that scarecrow, has its own agency, its own threat level.
Wow. Okay, so right away, the place goes from just farmland to something supernatural, or at least deeply strange.
Exactly. It moves from the everyday agrarian world into something else entirely, which leads right into what they said the scarecrow was actually for.
Because it wasn't just for birds, right? That's what the locals claimed.
Explicitly not for birds. The lore, the stories they told, were very clear on that. This scarecrow had a different job.
So, if not protecting the corn, then what?
Containment. Active containment. The purpose, they said, was to keep something else from getting out.
Getting out. Okay, that reframes the whole field. It's not a farm. It's a prison, a holding cell.
And the scarecrow is the guard, or maybe the lock on the door.
You really need to pause on that for a second.
Okay.
Imagine you, the listener, moving into a new house all excited, and the first thing you learn is your backyard is basically a supernatural containment zone.
Yeah. And the thing supposedly keeping something locked up is this. The scarecrow. Normally harmless, right? But here, it's got this incredibly sinister, vital job.
And you mentioned the corn was dying. That feels important now.
It really does. If the scarecrow's job was protecting a harvest, dying corn means it failed. But here, the corn is failing, yet the guard is still seen as essential. Vital.
So whatever it's containing is way more important than the crops.
Seems that way. The priority isn't the harvest. It's keeping the secret, keeping whatever it is suppressed. It almost implies the guard is protecting against the land, not for it.
Making the field itself the problem. And the scarecrow, Maybe just a symptom.
Or its tool, a necessary tool, a specialized guard built for containment, not crop protection. That's the first big signpost saying the story isn't playing by normal rules.
Okay, so to figure out this whole containment thing, we need the origin story. The sources bring up the original owner, right? Elijah Crowe.
Yep, Elijah Crowe. He's the key to it all, the foundational story, the tragedy that supposedly started this whole system.
So what happened to him?
The story goes, there was a huge storm, ruined his crops completely. Total failure as a farmer, basically. And then he just vanished, disappeared.
Vanished, okay. And the legend connects his vanishing directly to the Scarecrow.
Immediately. That's the really unsettling part. The lore says the Scarecrow wasn't just, like, put up after he disappeared.
What then?
The story, the really chilling detail, is that it was supposedly built from the remains of Elijah Crowe.
Oh, wow. Okay. Built from his remains. Mm-hmm. That takes it way beyond just a sad story. That sounds ritualistic.
It really does. And this is where you get into these deep, dark themes in local folklore, particularly around sacrifice and containment. The Scarecrow becomes this composite thing.
How do you mean?
It's like it embodies both the victim Elijah Crowe, the failed farmer, and the solution the guard needed afterwards. It's the failure and the fix, all rolled into one disturbing object.
So the victim is the guardian.
That's the implication. And you have to ask, why would people create and pass down a story like that, where the guard has to be made from the person who was lost?
It suggests the price for keeping that thing contained is, well, it's steep. It's permanent. Bodily.
Assimilation, maybe. He wasn't just gone, he was repurposed. Turned into the very material needed to draw the line, to set up the boundary.
Like he became part of the environmental controls, literally.
And that hints that whatever is in that field, or maybe the field itself, operates on some kind of exchange principle. The crops failed. That was the trigger. But a human life or body was the payment needed for the new setup.
The failed farmer becomes the land's resource.
In a way, yeah. He couldn't manage the land productively, so the land used him to manage itself or manage the threat within it. And that might explain why the locals believed it so strongly. It's not just bad luck. The place consumes people.
Okay, so that's the backdrop. This incredibly dark, entrenched local history. And into this walks Mark, 17 years old, full of modern skepticism.
He's the perfect foil, isn't he? The necessary challenge to the old ways. The sources say he openly mocked the locals, thought it was all just campfire story.
Then he had a plan to prove it, right?
Yeah, a very specific goal. Prove it was nothing more than straw and rags.
And his weapon of choice.
A camera.
Ah. Technology versus folklore. He's going to use hard evidence, photographic proof, to bust the myth wide open.
Exactly. He's setting up this empirical challenge, science against the supernatural.
But the irony, of course,
is that the very tool he brings to expose the truth ends up documenting, well, something else entirely. His challenge is what seems to set things in motion. The containment system, built on secrecy, reacts when someone tries to force it into the light.
With a camera flash.
Precisely. It sets the stage perfectly for what happens next. The environment itself seems to react to his intrusion.
Right, the incident itself. The sources really slow down here, focusing on the sensory details. It sounds like Mark crossed a line, metaphorically and literally. It's an October night.
Harvest time, potentially significant.
And he goes into the field, flashlight in one hand, camera in the other.
And the first thing that hits him, according to the narrative, is the sound. Or rather, the lack of it.
Silence. But specific silence. No crickets, no wind.
Yeah. And out in the deep countryside, that absolute absence of background noise. That's not just quiet, it's wrong. It's like an act of vacuum.
Like the field itself is sucking in the sound, creating this bubble.
That's what it feels like. A pocket of intense, unnatural stillness. Like stepping into a soundproof room, but outdoors, the normal world just stops at the edge of the corn.
And then into that silence, one sound emerges.
Just one. Dominating everything.
Yeah.
Only the faint creak of rope.
Ugh! Okay, that immediately focuses everything on the Scarecrow.
Right. It suggests tension, maybe movement, or like something huge hanging is breathing. It's the sound of the guard, maybe acknowledging its duty. Or acknowledging him.
So he gets closer, flashlight beam hitting it. And his first thought, it's bigger than he expected.
Taller than he expected. So not just the standard guard and Scarecrow. This thing was built to loom, to dominate.
But it's the other details that really start to unravel his straw and rags theory.
Definitely. The sources point out its clothes were damp.
Damp. In a field of dying corn, under the open sky, shouldn't they be dry? Brittle?
You'd think so. Dampness suggests, well, something internal. Moisture from within. or maybe drawing dampness up from the ground, connecting it to the earth in a way dry straw wouldn't. It defies normal decay.
And the smell.
Ah, yes, the smell. A smell of decay, the sources say, which immediately makes you think back to
Elijah Crow, the supposed remains.
Exactly. And not just decay, but also something sour in the soil. That suggests something unnatural, maybe acidic, an active process happening.
So it's not static, it's organic, decaying, maybe connected to the ground, and smells wrong.
It's all building a picture of something that is definitely not just wood and hay. It supports that horrific origin story it's made of, or incorporates organic, deteriorating parts.
Yeah.
But it's still functional.
Okay, now the camera, the core evidence, supposedly. Mark uses the flash, his tool for truth.
And the flash itself seems to trigger the response. It documents movement, but crucially, movement that happens between moments of observation. That's classic escalating horror.
So photo one, what happens?
Flash goes off. And in that instant of light, the scarecrow's head seemed to tilt slightly toward him.
Tilt? Like it heard the click or saw the light. Recognition.
Seems like it. Acknowledging the intruder. Moving from just being there to reacting.
Okay. That's creepy enough. Then photo two.
Marsh, probably unnerved, maybe fumbling a bit, takes another shot, another flash. And in that picture, its arm was closer.
Closer? How much closer? Did he see it move?
The implication is no. It happened in the darkness, between the flashes. He takes the picture, then sees the result. Its arm has shifted position.
So it's moving, but only when he can't properly see it. Fast movement in the blind spots.
If it's made of heavy, damp, decaying stuff, moving that fast implies some serious unnatural strength. And yeah, executed while his attention is elsewhere, maybe recovering from the flash, it suggests it's not just reacting, it's actively closing the distance. Hunting.
Using the camera flashes like a strobe light to mark his own approach.
That's a terrifying way to put it, but yeah.
And then, photo three. Or is there a photo three?
The narrative gets a bit fragmented here. It says Mark panics, drops the camera, drops the flashlight. So maybe the third photo is just darkness, or maybe he never even took it.
And then the sound comes back, but it's his sound.
His own scream swallowed by corn.
Swallowed by corn. So the silence breaks, but only to absorb his terror.
It suggests the field isn't just a passive backdrop. It's participating, dampening the sound, maybe, containing the evidence of the struggle, ensuring it stays quiet.
He challenged the system.
And the system, the field, the entity, whatever it is, neutralized him. And even the sound of his fear. Instantly.
Which brings us to the morning after. The discovery. The shift from spooky atmosphere to something more forensic.
Right. Mark is gone. But his tools, he stabs. The flashlight, the camera, they're found right there. At the edge of the field. Marking the boundary.
Almost like they were placed there.
Could be. But the really critical forensic detail, according to the sources, is about the ground itself. His footprints.
What about them?
They found his tracks going into the corn, but then they just stopped. Footprints stopping mid-row.
Stopping. Not turning back. Not scuffed like a struggle.
Just stopping. Abruptly. Which rules out him just running away.
Yep.
And it doesn't really suggest being dragged either. So,
what does it suggest? Taken upwards? Or given the field, maybe downwards?
Pulled down into the sour soil. It's a chilling thought. Absorption. Assimilation. Not just grab, but remove from that plane of existence.
Okay. But the camera survived, and it held the final piece of the puzzle, the smoking gun photo.
Exactly. The last image recovered from the camera and the description. It's confirmation of the worst kind.
What did it show?
It showed the scarecrow standing behind Mark.
Behind him, but he was photographing it in front.
Which means, while he was focused forward, dealing with the tilting head, the closing arm, the real threat, or maybe another aspect of it, had already gotten behind him.
It was surrounded, trapped.
Looks that way.
Yeah.
And the specific detail.
Yep.
One gloved hand reaching for his shoulder.
Gloved. Not straw, not rotten wood, but a glove.
Yeah. That detail is so specific. Gloves imply. Well, they imply something more than just a crude construct. Intent. Maybe even a deliberate choice not to touch skin to skin. It suggests a level of coordination. Intelligence, turning the capture into something deliberate, maybe even ritualistic.
Wow. Okay, so that photo confirms the immediate danger. But the real confirmation of Mark's fate, the thing that ties it all together, comes later.
Weeks later.
Right.
This is the transformation part. The neighbors, the same locals who probably gave the original warnings, they notice something has changed about the scarecrow.
Changed how?
It looked younger.
Younger? How does a scarecrow look younger?
That's the disturbing part. It implies Mark's vitality, his youth. was somehow infused into the Scarecrow, refreshing its decaying form, replacing the old rod of Elijah Crowe with something new.
So he wasn't just taken, he was used as parts.
Or fuel. Or maybe the whole structure was somehow renewed by him. And there was one final, undeniable piece of evidence linking Mark directly to this changed Sentinel.
What was that?
It was wearing his jacket. Mark's faded denim jacket.
No. Seriously.
That's what the sources claim. The ultimate proof of assimilation. His identity wasn't just erased. It was stolen and put on display. He became the new uniform for the guard.
So Mark literally became the Scarecrow. Or part of it.
That's the terrifying implication. Assimilation and replacement. That seems to be the core mechanism. He became the next layer, the next iteration of the Crowfield containment system. The Scarecrow absorbed him, physically, even taking his defining piece of clothing.
Which suggests this is a cycle. The field needs these sacrifices, these new components to keep the guard going.
It seems that way.
Yeah.
Perpetually refreshed,
yeah.
Using the very skeptics who challenge it.
And the town's reaction. His story just got folded into the existing legend.
Immediately. His disappearance, his documented skepticism followed by vanishing. It became the ultimate validation of those initial warnings. He turned into the cautionary tale. Proof that the locals were right all along.
The field basically used his fate to reinforce its own mystery.
You can say that. His parents, understandably, moved away. Left the house, the field behind. But the field itself and the entity, they remain. The system continues.
And the sources mention this ongoing element, right? This cycle keeps turning.
Yeah. There's this final chilling observation. The locals keep watching, keep telling the story. And supposedly, each harvest, someone swears the Scarecrow's face looks more like the last person who mocked it.
Oh, come on. That's just brutal.
It implies the transformation isn't just physical, but maybe facial too. Or perhaps it's just folklore amplifying the horror. But it reinforces the cycle.
Right.
Mock the legend, become the legend, become the face of the warning.
The punishment is becoming the proof, maybe literally.
And it suggests the field is smart in a way. It recruits its future warnings from the ranks of those who defy it, ensures its own survival by consuming its challengers.
Okay, so let's circle back to the core idea, the original warning. The Scarecrow is built to keep something else from getting out. But based on everything, Elijah Crowe's remains, Mark's assimilation, the jacket, the younger look, is it really about keeping something in? Or is the Scarecrow itself the thing, a mechanism the field uses to gather components?
That's the $1 million question, isn't it?
Yeah.
Theory one, it's a guard, maybe powered by sacrifice,
yeah.
Keeping some older entity locked up. Maybe Elijah himself is the thing being contained.
Okay, theory two.
Theory two, the Scarecrow is the entity or the primary tool of a larger entity, the field itself. And its function isn't just guarding, it's harvesting, perpetually collecting new parts, new identities to sustain itself or the boundary.
The evidence seems to lean towards the second one, doesn't it? Especially the jacket. Why wear the jacket if you're just a guard keeping something else in?
Exactly. The jacket is symbolic. It's identity theft. It serves no practical guarding purpose. It suggests the entity under the jacket is evolving, taking on aspects of his victims.
So containment gets redefined. It's not a static wall. It's a dynamic predatory process.
And if the guard is the thing being contained, or if it becomes the contained thing through this process, then the system is inherently unstable. It needs constant, gruesome maintenance.
The guard consumes the next guard.
Effectively, yes. It has to keep refreshing itself, which raises that terrifying thought. Mark's function now, maybe, is to stand there wearing his own jacket, until the next skeptic comes along.
The field weaponized his remains to protect itself.
And if that harvesting is necessary to maintain whatever boundary exists, it implies the field itself is the core entity, operating on some kind of terrible energy exchange, using life force, maybe identity itself, to hold back who knows what.
Mark didn't debunk the legend. He just became the latest chapter.
He updated the software, so to speak. The tragedy isn't just that there's a monster. It's that the only way to deal with it, according to this lore, is to become it, wearing the stolen clothes until it's your turn to be replaced.
Which leaves us with that final unsettling line from the sources, the one that sort of flips the whole idea of control.
Mm-hmm. They said it was built to keep something from getting out.
But sometimes the field decides it wants back what it's already taken.